Hey there, I'm Kate Wells, and this is Art Pod. It's Michigan Radio's roundup of the artists and thinkers that we're following right now and we think you need to know about. So today, I want to take Art Pod back in time. Way back in time. Now, you probably know what I'm about to tell you because you're a public radio listener, so you've read a couple nerdy history books in your time. But right now, we are in the midst of the 150th anniversary of the Civil War. You could also call that, I believe, the sesquicentennial. Help me out with that pronunciation. I'm still not sure I've got it right. But basically, what this means is that your great uncle, the war reenactor, is having the time of his life. But if you're like me and you get antsy by about hour three of the Ken Burns Civil War documentary, now there is something for us. I've got to go over to Michigan State University, where they're doing something a little bit different. They've got all these letters from Civil War soldiers and families in Michigan, and they're saying, let's do something with this. They are bringing them into the Google age by putting them up online and just making them really interesting and easy to get a hold of. So before we go to that archive, I just want to mention that there is some historically racist language in this story because of the content matter and the time, and it may be offensive and it may also not be appropriate for children. So with that out of the way, here's the story. Even when it is for the sake of history, there is something a little creepy about reading somebody else's love letters. And by creepy, I mean awesome.
So this is the guy who was writing to his girlfriend, Emma.
My yes. Darling Emma. Remember what I said in my last letter about kissing red cheeks? I felt as good as it could be. Oh, my goodness.
Yes, they're really
Send
steamy.
Send the picture. This is Ed Bush. He's an archivist at Michigan State University. And we're sitting in this totally silent, fluorescent-lit basement, essentially exactly what you would think of when I say Civil War Letters Archive. But Ed realized that Michigan State University had gotten all of these collections of Civil War letters over the years. And he thought, well, this is a shame that nobody's even looking at this. So he and a handful of grad students and some very patient volunteers transcribed 3,000 of these letters, and they've put them all online in this website that's easy to search, and it is catnip for historians, teachers, and of course, family genealogists.
You get the sense of connectedness, and you get the sense of personal history when you read the letters.
Diane Tishner is one of those amateur family historians, and she used the MSU archive to track down letters from her first cousin four times removed, a Union soldier with the fantastic name of Irenas McGowan. And this is what is interesting and different about this archive. These are not letters from major generals, people who might have known that their letters would be saved and read by future generations. These are just people from Michigan. So I rallied the Michigan Radio Ken Burns Theatrical Company to read you a couple of these letters. Let's get the music here. All right. This is a letter from Deb Payne. Her husband is at war. She's staying in Missouri, which is a border state at that time, and she's having to constantly protect herself from robbery and rape.
I go to bed at night, but not without some deadly weapon by my bed. I keep a hatchet and two revolvers that my husband has sent me. One night, I was awakened by someone saying, "Are you asleep?" I gave the alarm, but when folks got to my room, there was no one to be found.
And then, of course, there are the letters that get into slavery and race. And these are always prickly to read, but they are especially so when these could be the great-great-great-granddads of somebody down the street from you. Or it could even be one of your family members. This one is from Thomas Davis. He's a Union soldier writing to his Michigan family from Tennessee.
Dear sister, I do not approve of sending Negroes north into the free states, and I do not think there will be much of it done. I would almost give my existence to see every nigger removed from the face of the American continent.
Some of these letters let you follow people for months, even years of their lives. You see who dies, who's born, who's in love with who. And for Ed Bush, the archivist, that is what hooks him. He says he has to know what happens to these people. For example, the Romeo from the beginning of the story, the guy who was writing all these steamy love letters to his fiancée, Emma, they don't have a happy ending.
I know you are a good girl, far too good for me.
Oh, no. Why does he do it?
Well, I had to do some more research on it because I had to know what happened. And I found out he had met someone down in Tennessee where he was stationed.
Well, poor Emma went on to die in her early 40s, while her ex goes on to be a very successful politician. In East Lansing, I'm Kate Wells, Michigan Radio News. Now, before we move on to the rest of ArtPod, I just want to give a very special thanks to our intern, Austin Thomas. This guy has a great voice, and so I asked him if he would be one of the voices of the soldiers here, particularly the racist Union soldier. And even though the guy has never had a chance to be on the radio before, and even though his parents were all excited to hear their son's first time on the radio, and they knew it was going to be a controversial one, I want to thank him for taking one for the team. He's got a really nice voice for radio, right? So thank you, Austin. Now, the last thing we're going to do today is we're going to talk about some music coming out of West Michigan. And you probably haven't heard of this band, but you should have. This is a completely personal opinion, but this is some of my favorite music that I've ever heard. And I'm not alone in this. This music is getting attention in New York, D.C. It's making best lists of the year left and right. And we're talking about Bill Ryan specifically. He's a composer and professor at Grand Valley State University. And if you've heard that name in combination with GVSU before, it's probably because a couple of years ago, he led the school's music program to national attention. They played to packed festivals in New York City. One of their performances got a million hits on YouTube. But now Ryan and his own band, called Bill Band, they have a new album. It's their first in almost 10 years. And Ryan talked with stateside host Cynthia Canty about this new release and the life events that inspire his music. Take a listen.
This is Stateside, and I'm Cynthia Canty. We turn now to one of the leading lights on the new music scene, Bill Band, led by composer and educator Bill Ryan. It's been 9 years since the last CD released from Bill Band, although Bill Ryan's continued to make his mark on contemporary music with his teaching at Grand Valley State University and the GVSU New Music Ensemble. It's really putting Grand Valley and Michigan on the map for those who follow and love contemporary music. So now, after 9 years, comes a new release from Bill Band. It's called Towards Daybreak, with emotive post-minimalist new music. Composer, conductor, producer, and educator Bill Ryan joins us now from Grand Valley State. Bill, welcome to Stateside.
Thanks so much for having me.
Good to have you. Well, you and Bill Band got so much critical praise with your 2004 album, Blurred. So why did it take nearly a decade for you to return to Bill Band?
Well, life. There's the short answer. That came out in 2004, and the very next year I moved. Relocated from New York to West Michigan and came to, I got a position at Grand Valley State University. And then why I got that position was I wanted to sort of start a new music culture, contemporary music culture, and that took a lot of work. And so I started an ensemble, and we did a couple cool projects, including three CD commercially released products. And I have found that I can only keep one of those going at once. So I did continue to write slowly, but really that was my focus, to sort of set up a nice foundation. And then that's done. And now the time is perfect for me to kind of refocus back to my own stuff for a bit.
And just for folks who may not be familiar with Bill Band, the musicians who work with you, tell us a little about them. Where are they from, and how long have you worked together?
Yeah, I like to produce events and create events and make connections. And so a lot of what I do in addition to composing is produce concert series and do kind of residency educational things at my institutions. And so when I was in New York at Suffolk Community College, I met all of these players, most of these players, by supporting them in what they do as performers and composers and presenting them. So that's how I got to meet these people. And then we became really terrific friends through that work, and since then have specifically written music for them. There are five players in the group from New York from those days, and then also two of my colleagues at Grand Valley State are in the ensemble, and then we had an eighth member who's now in Chicago who's in the ensemble, so it's a sort of scattering of locations, but a really super core group of people. I believe a lot in team chemistry, and that is, I think, has a lot to do with the success of how well they play.
I would have to imagine that it's so important for the kind of music you play, where it there really is a real core connection between everybody.
Yeah, that's right. It's I mean, it's chamber music, so you know, just in terms of how they realize things, there's no conductor, so there's a ton of communication going on, subtle communication, with glances and little physical gestures, and all of these players have worked together in various capacities and really know one another professionally and personally. And they're all great improvisers. They're comfortable playing music, classical music or pop music or jazz music, and so they exist in these different worlds, which is really critical to my music. You know, I need those kind of players that have that understanding.
Well, can you give us some sense of how Towards Daybreak, the new release, differs from your 2004 release, Blurred?
Yeah, I mentioned before life sort of happened in this distance between 9 years ago. And this music is all coming more from, you know, as I get older, as we all do, we accumulate experiences, good and bad. And that has for sure happened to me, and I've noticed more of those, that experience coming out in my music, and so a lot of these tracks on the CD are reflecting a particular experience or an event or a more general thing. There's a track that I wrote for my father who passed away right when I moved out here. There's another for my mother who passed away earlier, but then there's also positive. There's a track on there that kind of reminds me of my two girls.
Which track is that?
Around. And that's called Sparkle. That was originally commissioned by a dance company, Karen Stokes Dance, down in Houston a couple years ago. But as I wrote it, even when I was writing it, I don't know, for some reason my girls, who are Sophia and Annalie, 9 and 12, just sort of jumped into my head as I was writing. And so it's kind of this like sparkly, girly, positive little piece.
It's a wonderful track.
Thank you.
And I'm going to ask in a moment if you'll tell us which tracks came from losing your parents. But before you tell us, I'd like, if I might, to hazard a guess. And I'll say that because a loved one who's very, very dear to me has just been moved into hospice. Mm-hmm. So I'm beginning the process of saying goodbye to her. And I'm going to tell you, without knowing what tracks were related to your parents, I found that track 8, which is Blurred, really captures what I'm feeling inside. Was that one of the ones for your parents?
Track 8 was, sort of the started all of this. My mother was killed in an automobile accident in 2000. Mm-hmm. Obviously very tragic and sort of knocked me off my feet artistically for several years, and I wasn't able to get anything together to write. And when I was sort of finally able to, 2003-ish, that's the piece that came out. I wasn't sort of consciously trying to do that. It just, you know, that was just, I was consumed with that. And track 8 was the result of that. And then track 1, what opens the CD is Simple Lines, and that's a sort of a lush cello piece that's concerned with my father's passing. He passed away from cancer, and was again, I didn't set out to write a piece about him.
Yes.
It was more like I was in this certain frame of mind and reflecting a lot on his life. And that piece came out.
And you've had to really cope with the two extremes, the sudden loss and then the protracted dying, that you had to live through that. And you really do hear it in the tracks.
Oh, yeah. Again, I just find it very interesting. When I was a young composer, I approached my music based on that sort of absolute things like, oh, that's an interesting rhythm, let me explore that, or that's an interesting melody, with no thoughts of kind of extra musical events. And as these experiences have happened, you know, both good and bad, I just find my frame of mind changing when I write.
You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty, and speaking with Bill Ryan, composer, teacher, and his new CD with his band, Bill Band, is out now. It's called Toward Daybreak, and certainly making his mark on contemporary music as a teacher at Grand Valley State University, and also leading the GVSU New Music Ensemble, which has done very, very well. And it's just amazing to think that these young musicians can come to you and wind up kind of fast-tracking themselves into a process of recording CDs and making music that's acclaimed from coast to coast. And I wonder, as you look at those youngsters, do you see yourself, your early years when you first became drawn to music?
That's a good question. I suppose in a way. I mean, you know, when I was very young, I was just very curious, and I you know, many of our students come here and they're not exposed to contemporary music because
right.
the literature they tend to play is hundreds of years old by people that aren't on the planet anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so just seeing the my students, sort of their eyes light up when they are exposed to someone, when they get to meet a composer in the flesh, that reminds me. I mean, because for sure, I went to school to be a band teacher and a trumpet player. And then later in my training, as a junior maybe, I became real interested and exposed, thanks to my teacher, to contemporary music. So that does remind me a little bit of my path.
You compose, you produce, you teach. Are there other career goals that you're aiming for?
Other career goals? You know, I have to say I am super content. I love what I do. I love the fact that I do have these different, you know, I'm just not a composer, which is mm-hmm. possibly why maybe I'm not prolific as those that are, but I do like to produce events. I, you know, I love to teach. And I think of it, you know, if I didn't love to teach and I was just pursuing writing, my teaching would suffer and my students would as well. So, I again, very content. I would love it if I could continue to work with this ensemble, the Bill Band Group, maybe write another CD or two. So who knows?
Bill Ryan, his all-star septet is Bill Band, and their new release is Towards Daybreak. And, of course, he'll be continuing teaching at Grand Valley State, GVSU, New Music Ensemble. Much happening in new music in West Michigan, all thanks to Bill Ryan. Thanks for talking with us today, Bill.
Thanks so much for having me.
That is it for us at ArtPod today. I want to say thanks, as always, for listening. And remember, please tell us what you think about ArtPod, about what we should be covering, and most importantly, tell us what's going on in your neck of the woods when it comes to arts, culture, thinkers, painters, anything. We want to know. We want to hear from you. So you can do that by going on to michiganradio.org, click on Share Your Story, and we can't wait to hear from you. Till then, I'm Kate Wells for ArtPod and Michigan Radio News.
Support for arts and cultural reporting on Michigan Radio comes in part from a grant from the Michigan Council for Arts and Cultural Affairs and the National Endowment for the Arts.